This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Hey guys, this is Matteo Rizzi. I'm the executive producer of Breaking Banks Europe. Welcome to a special edition of the show in this challenging times. And the title of this show today is News from the FinTech Front. I'm here with a lot of people, you know, carefully chosen to give us a little bit of perspective of what's happening, you know, in the different parts of Europe. All of them are super famous in the fintech space. Some of them are actually my co-hosts in some of the Breaking Banks show. So what I would propose is that you guys discover them one after the other without me telling you who they are just yet. But I'm just telling you that we are connecting from Italy, Portugal, Benelux, Spain, UK, and Germany. So hopefully I'm not forgetting anyone. And the reason for us wanting to do this show, that is going to be, by the way, a little bit longer than the others, is that basically each month of lockdown means 2 to 3% GDP loss for the Eurozone. So what's happening is that despite the fact that fintechs might be a little bit more ready than traditional players because they are in most cases already digitally enabled, you know, most of the ecosystems have been already disrupted. And, you know, of course, countries have reacted already in different ways. And that's, you know, part of what we're going to talk about today. And also, you know, for the ones who are still working a little bit or, you know, able to finish some of the deliverables that they started before COVID, you know, let's hear how the ecosystem is reacting. So enough of me. I would like to start with our first guest. So Francesca Liverti from Italy. Ciao, Francesca. Welcome to the show.
Ciao.
Tell us a little bit what's happening over there.
Italy, as you all know, is probably the country that was much more affected by the virus, or at least the first one, especially in the north of Italy and in Milan, where I'm based now. The situation is quite tough, both on the health side as well as economically, of course. We got some good news, though. Yesterday, we reported the first lower rate of new cases, at least in the city of Milan, which of course doesn't mean anything for now because it's still very early to understand the impact that this whole thing will gonna have. But in addition, also, the government issued some new economical measures, a new rescue package, as they call it. So yesterday, a new 400 billion of liquidity was injected in the system. I mean, it's like an unprecedented measure, especially for the Italian government. It's quite a huge mobilization of public resources. And it's still, again, very early to understand if these measures will have an impact or not, but at least something both on the health side, the healthcare system, and on the economic side has been taken into practice. So we will see. I mean, I think we are all on the same boat. As you were saying, fintech companies, they seem to react a bit better than the others because they are, as we all know, much more used to, they are digital by default, let's say. much more used to work remotely and much more used to the whole digital environment. So it's easier for them to adjust. What I can see working a lot of big banks and big companies is that for them is a little bit different. So especially the first week of the lockdown, I have to say, was quite funny, if I can say. I think I received something like 5 emails in the whole week, which is quite unbelievable. But then, I mean, people started to react, to adjust. I heard some of our clients from big banks, they are saying that they are actually working much more than before, which unfortunately I don't think it's a positive thing, because probably it's just very difficult for them to adjust and to be efficient in the way they are working. But I mean, if we can see a positive side of this whole situation, probably is this one, like they need to adapt, they need to adjust, and they are trying to do so.
Thank you, Francesca. We are going to actually afterwards talk with all of you with this sort of digital leapfrogging that this condition sort of force all of us into, and how you think the ecosystem is reacting to that. So from Italy to Portugal, actually one of us that you will discover is telling if this order is due to the football ranking, but I actually don't think so. I wouldn't dare to say so, but hey, Marco Nigris from Lisbon. How are you, Marco? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Matteo. Thank you. Thank you for welcoming us.
So what's happening in Portugal?
In Portugal, other countries in Europe, we're in a lockdown. It's more like a soft lockdown because we can go and run outside, which is cool, but always with the measurements, social distancing and everything. Regarding the ecosystem and the startups and the measures that the government is taking, there is a lot of money destined to SMEs, mostly in tourism and restoration. So the fintechs and the startups are not reached by these measures, which we're trying to, as the Portugal Fintech Association, we're trying to push some of the measures going into this ecosystem. There's a thing here that we're talking about layoffs and loans, and most of the startups are not touched by layoffs. And if they are, they are losing their most valuable asset, that is talent. So we joined a movement that is called Tech for COVID here in Portugal. It has 4,000 voluntaries and also other projects. And we've taken very seriously what to do and how to help the startups. And the government and like everyone, and Francesca said that too, this is unprecedented. So incumbents, investors, startups, and also government don't know what to do, but they are very open to hear for suggestions. So we're focusing in 1 to 5 measures that could be taken. One is tax exemption instead of layoff. So social security, for example, you can still have your employee, your talent, and have a cash flow or liquidity. Another condition is the layoff, but only for startups with special conditions. And the problem here was raised is what is a startup for the law? And this was very challenging, because you can say, okay, yeah, it's a tech-based company. And what we agreed is to say that startups are those ones who receive investment from investors that are in the Securities Market Commission, and also that they could be subscribed to an incubator network, national incubator network. So it's a good solution. And then the others are incentivizing investing or give more flexibility to Portugal 2020 funds.
Interesting, Marco. From here, let's move into what is considered to be the cradle of fintech, which is the UK. And we have Nina Mohanty, who is also one of the co-hosts of Breaking Banks Europe. Nina, welcome again to the show.
Hello, hello. So glad to be here in quarantine with all of you.
What's happening over there?
Well, I guess we don't really get to count ourselves as a part of the EU anymore, but we'll save that controversy for a different day.
We're still in Europe, huh? Technically, you can still.
We're still there, although we won't come out for anything else. Like,
what about the legal stuff?
Yesterday was a very grave day in the UK. The Prime Minister was admitted to the intensive care unit in hospital. So it's never really great to start, you know, summarizing how things are going by saying that the Prime Minister is in hospital. But I think you're entirely right. I think with fintech kind of having reached a saturation point in the UK, there's a lot going on right now. A lot of it has been focused primarily, and which I'm very happy to see, on small, medium-sized businesses and then on employees themselves. So we saw on March 23rd, which feels like years ago now, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, he announced Corona Business Interruption Loan Scheme, which actually earmarked £1.2 billion to be distributed through 40 lenders to small businesses. But it is a bit of a really worrying time for small businesses because obviously everything is closed down and, you know, the industries that are suffering the most are hospitality, dining out, obviously restaurants, and then followed by retail. And so trying to get the money into the hands of people is just part of the problem. It's also hard to serve food when you are in lockdown. So we've seen a lot of creative things here pop up since then. I have a grocery delivery coming from a business that normally just sells donuts. and they are including donuts in the grocery delivery, but we've seen a lot of small businesses become very flexible, creative, and kind of adapt as quickly as they can. At the same time, the government has been looking after the employees of the UK. So they've introduced the word furlough for the first time ever in UK employment law, which basically means that businesses don't have to fire or lay off, or fire seems harsh, that's not the right word. They don't have to lay off their employees. What they can do is actually furlough them and they'll get 80% of their pay or up to £2,500. But this is only for 3 months, and this, we don't really know how things are going, if we're still going to be in this situation in 3 months. I've been very heartened by seeing the fintech community kind of gathered together and attack the problems that we're facing, but I'm sure we'll talk about that more soon.
Thank you, Nina. Actually, you know, we were talking about this sort of schemes to help startups, and it is not always easy. And our next guest can probably talk about this because, you know, is my co-founder. So we've been talking about this very topic more than once. Actually, for a startup, is not easy because, you know, maybe startups are, of course, like in exponential growth. So unless, you know, you can demonstrate that you lose like 70% of the business, they don't care if, you know, you have been investing a lot and you're losing all your potential. Sometimes it is difficult to establish the right criteria for an SME or a startup particularly to get this funding because, you know, the parameters don't apply in the same way. So let's move to Spain. So from UK to Spain, Lázaro Campos, fellow co-founder of FintechSage. Lázaro, welcome.
Oh, as people walk behind me. Hi, good afternoon, everybody. So yes, Spain is a continuation of what you've heard already from Italy and from the UK. In fact, talking about the situation in Spain, is Francesca was saying Italy was the most impacted because it was the first. It was the first who actually suffered. And they've done a lot of the learning for us. Spain was number two, so we were able to close down faster than Italy did. But still, it's a very complicated situation. We've been in lockdown officially for a month now, although some of us were confined home earlier than that, expecting the need for social distancing to kick in. in terms of coming out of that, like in Italy, things start to look good. Ish good. Good is all a relative term, of course. The number of deaths and the number of infected individuals is going down. And things seem to be better in control. Hospitals are no longer in crisis mode. There are free spaces in the ER sections and so on. So these things are coming back to normal. So now the economic discussion is now more acute than it was a week ago when we were just trying to keep people alive. So likewise, the term Nina was talking about, furlough, what we have here is an equivalent to that, which is directly linked to the state of emergency in which we are, the state of alert, for a better translation. And it's a form of technical unemployment. So you, as an SME, you apply to the scheme. The administration responds in no more than 5 days. And you basically are able to put some of your employees in pause. And the government actually pays for 100% of all the tax related to that employment and 70% of the salaries. So it's a form of furlough. We call it ERE here, but is a very similar mechanism. And that only covers the period of alert. After that, then you default back into the normal situations where you, if you are in financial difficulty, you have a number of other schemes that support you. Now, here, there is nothing specific for the fintech sector. We are supported, well, we are one more in having access to these temporary measures. Important temporary measures, 200 billion initially. Now they're possibly going to double it. So it's a significant amount of public money that comes to do that. And the other side of things is that fintechs are impacted in different ways depending on their maturity, of course. If you happen to be a small SME, a small fintech that needs to sell to be able to then present a better picture for potential investors, all of that background, all of that scenario now is fairly shaken. Investment is not forthcoming. All of those small fintechs that were in discussions are no longer. Everything is gone pretty much frozen for smaller fintechs. Now, if you were a scale-up, and we will talk about that later, there is opportunity here. This is a digitization of your business now is a key requirement for success. So those of us who are in the digital world obviously are in a better position. But we'll talk about that later. So yes, much of the same that you've heard from Italy and the UK, both on the health and on the economic side.
Thank you, Lazaro. And from Lazaro to another habitual co-host of Breaking Banks Europe, Matthias Kroner from Germany, of course. Hi, Matthias. Welcome again to the show.
Ciao, Matteo. Ciao, all. Happy to be here. Happy to see you all in a healthy status, right?
Exactly. So tell us a little bit how Germany is reacting.
That was now really interesting to listen to all of you to get this, as you would say in England, from the horse's mouth, so to say, directly. And that also gave me some time to think it up about the German version. I would say Germany, so far, we're doing quite well on the shutdown. You know, it's as you can imagine, we Germans are very structured and we follow the rules. So that means if somebody's telling us to shut down, we probably do shut down, which of course it's now increasingly hard with spring also coming, for instance, here to Munich, first of all. Second, we have a strong discussion how long a shutdown should be continued, actually. And in particular, given the fact that, knock on wood, Germany, yes, we are testing a lot now. German testing capabilities now had been ramped up to, I would say, something like the most recent figure I heard is 500,000 tests per week, actually. So this is our German engineering again, you know. So this is, if we test, we test properly. So that is really good. And I would say, by the way, this is the most relevant, actually, we need to do. And still having the feeling and the hope that our cases remain on the level that they are, virologists to say no, that will change, so don't be too over optimistic. But having those statistics as they are today, you can imagine that the public pressure on actually letting it kind of be more relaxed on the shutdown is very high on the government. And then on top, which is maybe different to the rest of all of you, we are a federal country. So a federal nation means that we exist of 16 federal states, and more or less all those 16 states can make up their own regulation regarding the shutdown, regarding the schooling and everything else. There was a strong discussion whether this federal setup actually is helpful on it. On the other side, I did now read most recently that exactly that federal setup allows us to ramp up so quickly because it's like 16 governments in smaller regions to operate on the topics instead of one government in one large region, which always comes with a huge complexity. It is kind of indicated that the Monday or Tuesday after Easter will be a date in which the government will do a kind of assessment on the situation and will do further definitions on the lockdown for the future. I would expect it that maybe there will be some small relief is just to keep to reduce the pressure a bit. However, I think majority of the people still is very supportive to what is happening currently. In the startup environment, the government most recently announced the 2 billion additional funding for startups, which I found to be very positive. That was issued by the Ministry for Economics and Business on the one side. It's not specific on fintech, definitely not, but it's all over the place. I would say for Germany, I found that to be very, let me say, wow, somebody realized we have startups. On the other side, we have a very, very, let me say, strong discussion on in between now the ones running the country, the government saying, okay, we need to pay out loans, we need to support business, we need to keep liquidity high. And in the same time, maybe the regulator and the banks and those three stakeholders now really kind of finger pointing to each other saying, yeah, you are the first, you're the first. Why? Because banks are still, of course, following regulation, very restrictive in just paying out loans, because this is, you know, what we banks actually are trained to do, educated to do. And in the same time, you have a politician saying, no, pay out the money, let the money flow. And then you have the regulator calling up at the banks and saying, listen, shouldn't we do a stress test on you because the quality of your loans might be deteriorating. Yes, of course, the quality of loans will be deteriorating because I've been told to more or less kind of pay everybody, right? So let me say it seems to be the case that there is still a bridging to be needed in between political will on the one side and day-to-day execution. I guess we will solve that. Personally, I must say this is now, and I'm looking to Lazaro because Lazaro and I think we are more or less COVID-19 risk group. So personally, this is my third by age. This is my third crisis I'm witnessing. The first crisis I witnessed was in the year 2000, 2001 and 2002, which was the burst of the internet bubble. I was the CEO, co-founder and CEO of DRB Bank. Those days, so we had to reduce our team by 40% more or less in one quarter because revenues collapsed just like that. The second crisis, we created Fidera Bank actually. We filed for banking application in 2007, literally weeks later, the crisis started. And in the midst of that crisis in May 2009, we received and been awarded with the banking license by the German regulator for Fidera Bank. So that was something very positive I connect to a crisis, but believe me, it didn't make it any easier. So, but now this definitely, of course, is a totally new quality we are speaking about. So I'm very much looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Matthias. And last but by no means the least, Dongying Sil from the Netherlands. But of course, you know, Holland FinTech, you know, can speak for like a broader than Holland, of course. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, how they looked at the like a quarantine business, because it seems like a little bit like Portugal. It was, the choice was to do it a little bit softer than the rest of Europe. But Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very nice to see you all here. And indeed, I'm also looking forward to the discussion. Already heard some interesting things that we could move forward on, I think, in fintech. Maybe to start a bit with what's happening in on the Dutch side. Indeed, we have quite a soft lockdown here. Initially, actually, they didn't intend to close the schools, but especially under social pressure, because the teachers actually didn't want to teach anymore because they felt at risk and parents were keeping their children home. That's when they were forced to close the schools after all. But I would expect that rule actually to be terminated quite soon after the May holiday. So that's about basically the 8th or 9th of May. I would expect actually kids to go back to school, as it still seems that from all the research that has been done, that kids do not play a very important role in the dissemination of the virus. But besides that, indeed, all of a sudden, everyone started work from home. Nice roommate, Matteo.
Yeah, it didn't work. I said to go out, but he didn't realize that it was in the video. That's okay. At least it was half dressed.
No, exactly. He got the pants, you got the shirt.
Exactly. Yeah. Meet Samuele, my son.
So for the rest of what you see is that actually the adoption here was quite fast. I think already some of the banks were, before the lockdown, actually already into contingency plans by splitting all their operational teams in two and working half from home, half from the office. And I think they're continuing to do that to this day. For the rest, what you see is that most people actually, schools, most of the jobs that are here are, most people don't work in a physical industry, or as they call it nowadays, a non-essential industry. Basically, they have been told that they're doing a worthless job, but okay. What you see is that actually everyone is working from home quite nicely. It's going well. I think the internet is holding up. And most of the work is still getting done, except for the fact that everyone is in uncertainty. And so new business decisions are all being stalled. And I think that's also one of the biggest things that I see as a threat for the fintech industry at the moment, besides some very obvious things like deteriorating credit portfolios within certain sectors. I think what you see is that everyone that is dependent on growth, they will struggle at the moment because there is no growth. Everything, every decision for a new deal has been postponed to later, and that goes for everyone. And I think that's sort of the biggest risk what I see. And I think that's why I think, Lazaro, you refer to startups being hampered more than scale-ups. I think it might actually be the other way around, because as a non-revenue making company, you didn't intend to make revenue anyway. So you could still continue to build your product and discover how it works. I think if you're actually building on scaling month on month, if that stops, you're dead in a second. And I think that's what I see as well, that quite some companies are really dependent on this month-on-month growth to continue, plus the ones that are indeed in the fundraising process at the moment. So these, I think, two categories are hampered the most at the moment here. And that's where I see that basically most of the companies are the first ones to come into liquidity issues based from these two categories.
And of course, Netherlands as well, sort of, you know, throw some money into the market, right, yes. Don?
That's quite similar to what you see in other countries. So SME companies, especially if you can prove 20% revenue loss, then you're eligible for part-time unemployment scheme, similar like was mentioned before. All companies can file for free of cost tax deferration. So you can pay your tax 3 months later, at least. And they made an amount available of 4,000 euros per company. If you file for it, you get it, basically. Which, of course, is not a very big amount, but especially for smaller companies that might still have some impact. So it's really interesting to see how long the period is going to go. And I think that's also sort of what people are beginning to discuss now here, is that it seems like if you look into the medical impact, I think we're the third hit country in Europe. Not everyone realizes that, but if you look into the number of deaths per inhabitant, I think we're closing in on Italy and Spain quite a bit. But fortunately, the numbers seem to stabilize quite well now after the lockdown and the measures that have been taken. So what you see now is that the real discussion that's popping up now is, okay, aren't we damaging the economy to such an extent that we will see illness, death elsewhere, just because we actually push people out of employment into mental problems and all kinds of other stress that also will have an effect on the economy. While actually what we're doing at the moment is not really saving lives. We're actually just rescuing the healthcare system, because the people that generally die that are being infected are the ones that are at risk in any case and would be basically living for a couple of years, but probably not tens of years. And so you see at least that there's now increasingly discussion popping up, which of course sometimes go into the extremes. That's what people like to do these days to make a point. But I think in general, people begin to get more comfortable with the current situation and really want to focus on, okay, but what's coming after? And aren't we actually throwing away part of everything that has been built up in the economy that might not be recoverable that soon?
Thank you, Don. So I think that, you know, it's in this like first part of the show that is going to break in a moment, we sort of set the scene in the different like the parts of Europe. And after the break, we will come back and actually have a collective and, you know, reasonably messy discussion because there is a lot of us, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I am psychologically prepared to like manage the different views, and even if it overlaps a little bit, it doesn't really, I mean, it won't matter, to see how do we see the future and the recovery, and what do we, each of us, think will be the best recipe and the opportunity for recovery. So for now, stay with us because we're going to break for a short moment. Thank you.
Do you want to be part of Breaking Banks Europe? Reach out and learn more about the opportunity to be featured in one of our shows. With over 1.6 million listeners and counting, Breaking Banks Europe is bound to become the place to advance critical dialogue in Europe and the UK fintech scene. Reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Breaking Banks EU, or go to www.provoke.fm.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks Europe. Today we're talking about everything that during COVID and hopefully post-COVID will happen in different parts of Europe. We sort of ended the first half of the show with some thoughts from Don Ginsel. And if I can resume it in one sentence, he was saying something like, this right now is about saving lives, but soon the equation will be, or is likely to be transformed as, how much lives we are putting at risk if economies will keep crashing this way. So where is the right balance of preserving the health systems, which is the current battle that we are sort of struggling with right now? And when is the right time to start thinking of what will happen afterwards, before Europe collapses? And during our own break, Lazaro was pretty much aligning with this thinking, and I think he has something to add to it, isn't it, Lazaro?
You just added it, but I'll add it again. I think that Don brought it to that dichotomy, that balance that needs to be stricken in between preserving lives and managing the crisis of the health system, and that and the confinement having a significant impact on the economy, as you were saying, Matteo, to start the show, 2-3% reduction in GDP growth in Europe per month if we continue in the lockdown approach. So that is the challenge. How do you square that circle, that you save lives while protecting the economy, and that is not possible. And now the next chapter is all of these countries are going to start discussing how do you open up? What does the new normal look like post-COVID? Now we know that pandemia is not just an isolated event, it's likely to be a recurring event. And in fact, in the autumn, we may see another flare-up as the world goes through the phases. Europe now will move to the, in the summer, it will move into the southern hemisphere. Africa is kicking in. Latin America is going to be a significant issue. We already see early signs in Ecuador. We already see early signs that are very, very scary. So this is by no means gone. This is the first phase that Europe has to deal with. And now the discussion is, how do you open up? And what does that new normal look like? So that I thought that Don was launching that balance, and I think that is where it is right now.
Maybe just to add to that briefly, I think it's really about, let's say, lives versus the economy. But I think there's a lot of collateral damage that we're actually also talking about lives, but they're much less visible than currently the counters of the corona deaths. for example, there's the increase in home violence, for example, kids that are not being educated properly. And you see basically also the unemployment rates that also have quite a big hit on, for example, suicides, mental health, and other problems that are not very visible at the moment. But we do have to sort of keep an eye out for what the effects are from that perspective on not per se the economy itself, but actually on the people that have to live it through. And even though the economy as a whole might recover, there will be parts that will not recover probably. And the people that are in that space and are not flexible enough to move will be hit hard.
Which reminds me to the point, Don, and that's a good one, that even within the last financial crisis, 2008 and 9, if you look it up in Wikipedia, there is a list of how many casualties actually those financial crises are causing, not being a virus at all, right? But just by actually underfunding the health systems, by suicides, by, you know, whatever kind of very horrible developments then that leave a lot of casualties behind. I think it was more than definitely, it's like more than 10,000 people in Europe alone. So that had been accounted to the financial crisis in 2008 and 9. Yeah, it's horrible. And I do not know whether there will be a new normal anyhow. What I'm afraid of mostly is now that these kind of unavoidable cash injections. And by the way, I'm very happy the governments are reacting as they are reacting pretty quickly, not like in the financial crisis where it took weeks and months and years and so on, but now really injecting a lot of money into this. But this money one day has to kind of be extracted again out of the systems. We have to get it back again. So I think we have a lot of discussions like we will be entering into a cool, more relaxed and digital society and everything will be nice and shiny. I'm not sharing this kind of optimism at all. And I think, Marco, also to your point, I think startups really have to get ready for that and to develop new kind of maybe modify their businesses, getting more into cash flow centric instead of land grabbing market share and all that stuff. You know, it will not be like we had it before, just showing up, winning a million customers, making no revenues and be worth a billion. Mm-hmm. So this is not working again.
And that was already started. That has started even before the coronavirus.
Right.
I agree with you. This has been and now accelerated by it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we see a lot of bad news coming along. Marco, sorry.
Yes, that's very interesting. And I would love to jump in because Lazaro was talking about Latin America. I happen to be representing Portugal right now, but I was born in Argentina. And the thing there is that we Latin Americans, we don't have the resources that Europe has to the people. So if we have a hard lockdown, as it is in Argentina right now, the consequences will be much harder than in Europe or the rest of the world. And Matthias, you were talking about the crisis you've lived. I'm under my 30s and it's my fourth crisis. So I would love to just give a word to, instead of macroeconomics, to the startups. And I've been talking with a lot of them. And one thing that you need to do right now is just sit down and analyze until the last detail of your financial spreadsheet. Cash, revenues, cost, because on the core business and lower the cost that are not essential right now. At least that's how we do it in Latin America when we have crisis hitting us. And also take good care of your team and your talent, because you can recover from, you know, an economical perspective, but behind all this there is people. So yeah, and in a business model perspective, as a Latin American and pivoting many times in my life, I would consider pivoting and identifying patterns and trends that could be opportunities right now and in the future.
If I can jump on, I really agree with what Marco was saying. I really think this is a battle that only parties that can reinvent themselves can win, both actually for the startups, but also for the corporates. I mean, everybody was affected by that. Of course, in different ways, and the impact was very different, because if you have big shoulders, as we say, it's completely different the way you have been affected. But again, it's a situation that is going to impact on everybody. Big players, small players, and they all have to reinvent themselves. It's also really depending, from my point of view, in which country you are. Because we keep talking about Europe, but as you all know, Europe is not really homogenic as we want it to be. So Marco was talking about Latin America, but I can tell you that even historically, Italy is not the best player when it comes to crisis. So
I'm half Italian, Francesca.
Yeah.
So
also, yeah.
Too. You tick all the boxes, Marco. You tick all
the
exactly.
boxes. Yes, exactly. That's a good one. But yeah, so I don't want to be extremely negative, but of course, for what count Italy, was not coming from a very good base even before coronavirus. So now it is really difficult to imagine how the situation is going to be after that for small businesses, for startups, for funds. I mean, I'm not saying something crazy when I say that for Italian startup was always difficult to look for funds because we don't have the same easy access to money as in other places in Europe. Of course, we have a huge public debt, which is not helpful, of course. So again, I mean, we have to consider a lot of things and we do appreciate all the effort that the government is putting, but I believe that we really need to be mindful and think about a good way to reinvent our companies, our way of working in order to survive, because this is the key point, surviving for some countries.
Nina, it would be interesting, you know, Nina works for Klarna in case, you know, for the two in Europe that still don't know it. You know, you have a lot to say about, you know, how SME will react to this or, you know, how this will affect the SME market. Please share it with us.
Yeah, so maybe taking a different approach, not so much on the funding side, but you know, across the continent, we're seeing governments quite quickly move to make money funds available, right? So actually, if I may also put on my chapeau and also speak for La France, they've also in France said that they are going to put aside 45 billion to stimulate businesses. And, you know, in the UK, we've got 1.2 billion for small businesses. I think what's really interesting to me, and maybe to add a little bit of a positive flavor, is how these will be dispersed. Because I'm actually American, and the way that it's being handled in the US, which our sister podcast, Breaking Banks, I'm sure is speaking more eloquently about, is atrocious. I have been very heartened to see a lot of UK fintechs step up and try and create very creative new ways for these SMEs to access the funds that are available. So I said before that the coronavirus business interruption loan scheme was available through 40 lenders, but we see quite recently, who are they? Iwoka, Starling Bank, Capital on Tap, Funding Options, Funding Exchange, have kind of stepped up to the plate and said, hey, actually, why don't you let us disperse these funds? We already have a lot of SMEs on our platforms. We can get this to them more quickly. And I think as Matthias spoke about earlier, when we talk about incumbent banks, you know, they still, banks live to package risk and obfuscate risk. And so for them, they're still thinking with their banker hat on, which is, well, what is our risk framework right now for an SME? But it's a global pandemic. Throw the framework away. And so I find it really interesting. I'm very heartened to see that. I'm also very heartened, as we said before, just to see how businesses are trying to pivot. I think that I'm wary for our industry, but I also think it's kind of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I think for a lot of the businesses that maybe don't have a lot of runway right now, it is sink or swim for them. And they're going to have to figure out, especially, you know, in fintech, this is the best test. I mean, if you want to put a stress test as a VC on a company, it's like, can you make it through these times? And I'm very fascinated to see where businesses are pivoting. what they can do to still survive throughout this. And I watch with hope, not I swear.
Absolutely. And Nina, maybe this is the time, Matteo, that we should shift to what are the positives of it all? Because even in the biggest crisis, there's always rays of hope and ways in which we overcome. And Nina pointed at two of them. You know, I'm involved with four different kinds of players. I'm involved in Starling, as you know, in Payoneer, a payment company, a unicorn, Direct ID, a small startup struggling to get funding, and the Bank of England. You know, and I've been really impressed how all of them have actually turned to a digital footprint. How all of them, the Bank of England runs RTGS chaps from home as we speak. There is nobody manning the systems. This is the Bank of England. This is a central bank. There's nothing more traditional, you know, an organization that is very much representative of the traditional brick and mortar crowd. So all of them now have an ability to turn and to run systems. Starling, as Nina was saying, it was able within days to basically manage digitally and remotely. So I think we, that is the one thing, the first level, which is we are much more able to deal in the digital world than we thought. And second, that unlocks additional opportunity. Neobanks, Matthias, you can give us a course on this, but this is clearly an area in which they are going to see increasing market share, because that's what they were built to have. Maybe you have a reaction to that. And some of the fintechs that Nina was saying are able to turn around and help others to go through the crisis. So I think there is a lot of really good stuff happening. And I think that we are going to see an increase of opportunity in the coming months that wasn't there before.
Yeah, absolutely. So sorry, but also picking that up on neobanks, and but it's, to be honest, not only neobanks. It's also we see the incumbents acting massively on their digital channels. Surprisingly, I have to say, surprisingly, because what it took them like you know, the last 10 years to kind of change that and moving a bit slowly, actually now happens very, very quickly. And also another point I give you, absolutely, I think you're absolutely right, is if we wouldn't have had the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, I think the group of us and many others, maybe hopefully listening out there, would not sit there, because that was, let me say, the field on which finally fintech was founded. Okay, because back in 2009, when we received banking license, actually fintech as the phrase was not around, but then in 2010, the first showed up in peer-to-peer lending, crypto came, crowdfunding came. And why did it come? Because crowdfunding was implemented because we did not trust the banks anymore. They are evil, we are good. Peer-to-peer lending, exactly the same motivation. Crypto came along because we do not trust the fiat currencies anymore. We need to have some alternatives and replacements for that. So I'm with all of you, hoping, not knowing, definitely not knowing, but hoping that there is a kind of positive outcome of that crisis as well.
But I think there is. I think what we saw, I think, after the first financial crisis was especially a regulatory opportunity. Because indeed, also the regulators were open to explore alternative providers. And before that time, they would just have kept the market shut for new entrants, because they could keep that up. And they still like an overseeable small playing field rather than a diverse, dispersed small player landscape, as they saw afterwards. But that window has closed already with AML5, I think, recently for most companies. To actually start a fintech company has become quite unappealing. But I guess this crisis will also, again, open a new window from that perspective in a bit longer term. But also, one thing I wanted to pick on is what Francesca was saying earlier, is also, indeed, sort of the rapid change to digital that we are seeing at the moment. You see that within the banks, but also, for example, in all places like government, where a lot of processes would still rely on wet signatures and stamps, that's broken, right? And so you have to reinvent that, especially really fast right now. And as I see in the environment here, I see that actually that's not really a problem because processes were kind of obsolete already. But I'm really curious how that's going now. Currently, for example, in Italy or in other places where they were very much used to working like that in several places.
I don't know about the government, but what you were saying, Don, made me think yesterday I had a call with a bank. I'm not going to say the name. And at some point we were like, okay, we need a matchmaker between the bank and a startup. And we had to sign up for a pilot. And the guy at the phone told me, okay, then I will send it to my manager. Okay, but we need his signature. And I'm like, yes. So not rocket science. I mean, yeah, you need an e-signature. I think it's going to be okay. And it's like, no, Francesca, this document need to pass from 5/6 people at least. So it's not going to be done for tomorrow. And I'm like, guys, this needs to change because it's impossible then to handle routine jobs, daily stuff. So that was quite funny for me. But I mean, for me, it's everything. It's I don't have any legacy in any of the company I was working for with you, Don, and with Lazaro and Matteo. So for me, these kind of things are quite funny. But I understand that this is how it's supposed to be. So and this situation is putting us in front of the reality that probably things need to change.
I'm quite curious, actually, if I can just build off that. Francesca, a bunch of my friends and I were joking, Matthias, that in Germany it took a global pandemic to get people to stop using cash. And I find that quite funny. So I am kind of curious in, you know, for us in the UK, we've now increased the contactless limit so people don't have to deal with point of sale, you know, mobile point of sale or anything like that. And if it's actually changing behaviors in the countries where you are. Like consumer behavior, I mean.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was reading this morning that Satispay, digital payment startup in Italy, I was reading that is reporting an increase of 30% of usage in the last 2 weeks. Mm. I mean, Italy is more or less the same of Germany, I think. It's very much linked with cash usage, not really... surprisingly. So yeah, probably also it's going to be interesting to see how the behavior of people, the mentality of people is going to change.
Here in Spain, clearly you are not well, people do not want your money. They want your card. The pandemic now, banknotes you don't see. You're encouraged not to use banknotes, but to pay.
MasterCard and Visa are just loving this right now.
Absolutely.
We could make a new kind of conspiracy theory out of that, who started the whole thing, right?
Please, so guys, so don't go there.
There are so many of those.
Absolutely. So I think it, as always, it is a matter of what the concept is like, you know. I shared that the other day that I'm an investor in a company which... May I say that? I don't know. It's dealing with collection, kind of helping banks actually to reduce and better manage their non-performing loans. Well, you know, there was a reason I invested, and they founded that. The guys founded that company actually called Receive back in December, something like late 2018. And being a banker myself, you know, I found that always to be very annoying if the loans you're actually originating and you have on your books and you kind of destroy your earnings and your interest income by NPL, actually. So this is why I thought it makes a lot of sense to spend artificial intelligence on that, to spend and in kind of integrate digital processes on it, and so on and so forth. So for concepts like that, actually, I would expect that we have more concepts like that, because, for instance, now talking about fintech and banking, we will see an increase of NPL, non-performing loans, coming up, for sure, in consumer and SME, same thing. Protection by the states and the nations, well, will not make it. In Germany, there's a discussion that if you're an SME and kind of founded in 2020, or you're loss-making, you are not eligible to actually get a support. So that means if you're loss-making, this is it, you know? Yes, might have been the case anyhow. However, now this is it for 100% security now. So I think we will actually really see this kind of concepts that maybe support us out of and help us getting out of the crisis again. And I think that there's a huge opportunity. So for the ones sitting out there and listening and thinking about it, what would be the next big thing? I think exactly this kind of concept, maybe as in the past we had it more like in RegTech, for instance, or NPL and so on, management will be a way of keeping entrepreneurship high and in the same time getting us out of the aftermath of the whole COVID-19 mess. What do you think about that?
Matthias, I actually wanted to add, it's a good time here to inject a couple of numbers and statistics. The first is that when you look at a sort of a startup like KPIs, and if we imagine a hypothetical like the red, green, orange sort of KPIs result, there is only clearly one sort of ecosystem that has seen an increase of activities beside the payments, which is online asset management space, which has been actually comforted by a couple of conversations I had with small investment banks. They all say that March was one of the best months ever of the banks in terms of the bank, in terms of new cash collected. And by the same conversation, if we compare a 2020 with the 2008 crisis, financial crisis, it took actually 2 years to recover all your assets. Assuming that you invested in January 1st, 2008, you would have lost 40% at the end of the year. And it would have taken 24 months to actually recover all your capital. So it's not a question, but it's actually the last topic I would like all of us to talk about is, markets will recover if you are patient enough to be able to see the recovery coming. And for sure, if you have liquidity to inject. And that's one part of the market.
Matteo, and I would love to jump in on that first straight away, and then I remain silent. Promised. Promise broken. The liquidity we still have in the market is an outcome of the financial crisis 2008 and 2009, which is a signal that we did not digest that crisis by now. So this is the very critical point to this. On the one side, yes, what is definitely better, it is this crisis is not a distrust in banks crisis. It's a health crisis. It might result into a crisis that we are distrusting our banks. And Nina, by the way, let me add one more point. We have a shop here in Munich where you can buy your gold medals and gold coins and everything. People are queuing. This is like I don't know, whatever kind of times I've never experienced, but people are queuing meters and meters outside that shop, not at before the lockdown, so that is not forced to queue. It is just it's massive. People are just buying gold like hell. What I found to be interesting is that the Bitcoin is so kind of inline and pro-cyclic to the whole thing. So I think the liquidity is not the issue. The liquidity is around. I think people know that in the meantime. And yes, markets will go up again. That's for sure.
Okay, guys. I think that if we're looking for a positive note, Matthias just comforted me in giving a good one. This show, as anticipated, is already longer than the usual format that we have. It feels like this discussion, could go on for much longer than an hour. And maybe in another month, we'll have another show where all of us will pick up again and see, what's happening or what has happened in the different markets. And that might be actually a good idea to do some sort of Europe-wide monitor, in real time of the different things that are happening. It will be too long to give a final word to everybody, but thank you so much to all the guests today and the host guests that are usually hosts and today were guests. Thank you really a lot for your time. And I'll try to not forget anybody and just answer to like a hello and thank you, or like a couple of sentences from Francesca.
Thank you guys for having me. It's very nice, and stay safe, everybody.
Great. Marco.
Thank you. Thank you all. And I hope to see you soon in Portugal.
Lázaro.
Thank you very much, everybody. And I look forward to part two, whenever that may happen.
Nina.
Thank you so much for having me on. I can't wait for when this is over. We will all go for a festival.
Matthias.
Yeah, thanks, Matteo. Thanks, everybody, for participating. It was fantastic, and really let us never forget we are that creative and we can be that strong, so we will make it. I'm very positive.
And last but not least, Don, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you too. I think everyone, thanks for sharing. I think it's nice to keep on sharing these ideas across all the countries and different perspectives. Really great to be here, and definitely also looking forward to the next one. Stay healthy, everyone.
The European Commission should call us now. We've got all our events here.
Stay safe, everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Matteo.
Ciao.
And it's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.